We do talk a whole lot about church and state separation in America because we are constantly looking for the line between them. We'll spend the last part of today's show talking with a guest who will lecture on this very subject tomorrow, the Reverend Tony Hutchinson of Trinity Episcopal Church in Ashland. The Reverend Hutchinson comes at this discussion from both sides, having worked in both church and state. He spent 25 years as a diplomat, representing the United States in China and in Africa. His ordination in the Episcopal Church happened in Hong Kong in 2008. He served as a pastor in Beijing before becoming rector at Trinity Episcopal Church in Ashland 5 years ago. Father Tony, thanks for joining us.
It's good to be here. Thanks.
So if I read the timelines right, you were ordained while you were in the Foreign Service. Were there any issues within the State Department about that move?
Well, it's interesting. I was ordained in the Hong Kong Sheng Gong Hui, the Anglican Church of Hong Kong, when I was still a serving U.S. Foreign Service officer. I was the Cultural Affairs and Public Affairs Officer at the U.S. Consulate General in Hong Kong. And it was a little tricky. Obviously, the rules of the separation of church and state require that no official of the U.S. government ever advance religion or a particular religion, we need to avoid the appearance of doing that as well. And so you have to be very, very careful. And so I did my church stuff at the cathedral. I did my official stuff at the consulate and at the events associated with that work. And I never let them blend. It did occasionally bring odd scenes. I remember one day I had to celebrate noon mass at the cathedral, which was about a 5-minute walk from the consul general. It was my noon hour, mm-hmm. my time off. So I changed into my clericals to do the walk in my locked office. And somebody came with an urgent message, and they opened and they saw me and they said, "Oh," and they said, "Oh, this is strange. This is kind of like Clark Kent and Superman." And I said, "Yeah, it is kind of." And he said, "So which one is Clark Kent and which one is Superman?" This is a question I've been asking myself ever since.
I should point out that we have you here because you're giving a lecture with Ollie, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, tomorrow 1 to 3 at the Camelot Theater in Talent about the religious faith and the public forum and powerful force for good or for ill. The very phrase separation of church and state seems to produce arguments. And why do you suppose that is?
Well, it's because the actual origins of the wall of separation, as Jefferson pointed out in his letter to the Danbury, Connecticut Baptist Association, the very argument was always an argument based in some appeal to God. Mm-hmm. In that very letter where Jefferson says there's this great wall of separation, he makes the argument on the basis of the fact, as he is an Enlightenment deist, believed that the Almighty Creator of the universe had made the human mind free. And so even though there's a very distinct and intentional prohibition of the state advancing religion or a religion, most of the people who argued for that from the very beginning usually appealed to God in the process. And it's one of the results of that is this curious civil religion that we have in the United States. I mean, we have a separation of church and state, but very, very few politicians will end a speech without saying, "God bless the United States of America." I mm-hmm. mean, there's,
expectations, certainly, of having some level of godliness in you.
Yeah. And it's that's changing somewhat. I mean, particularly people under the age of 25, there's a great, a much larger number of nuns, none of the aboves.
Right.
And the effect of, the authority of religion as such has weakened enormously in our society. A lot of that, I think, comes from the fact that religion and religious organizations repeatedly abused their authority and their ability to sway people's opinions and actions. And people don't like abuse. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's reducing substantially in this generation. That said, it hasn't changed. I mean, Donald Trump was elected primarily because 8 out of 10 white evangelicals voted for him, and a vast majority of white Roman Catholics voted for him. If that those patterns that were based in religious identity hadn't occurred, he wouldn't have won in those key states where he got the majority in the Electoral College.
So, I mean, we can talk about church and state separation until the cows come home and go to separate pastures, for that matter, I guess. But the fact is that we still have expectations of people to have certain religious feelings to be part of the state.
Yeah. What I'm talking about tomorrow in the lecture is how do we get the better angels of our nature, as Lincoln put it in his first inaugural address. How do we get to our better nature or our better angels and not get our demons? The fact is, religion can produce such wonderful people as Francis of Assisi, Teresa of Calcutta, Martin Luther King Jr., Mohandas K. Gandhi, and they have great power for improving our common life. Religion also has produced the Inquisition. It has also produced, the preachers who supported American slavery, who supported apartheid in South Africa. I mean, it also produces ISIS. So religion can work for good or it can work for ill in the public sphere. And the question is, how do we get those better angels and avoid the demons?
Well, you know, I've heard it discussed by some people that what we're talking about in America is freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. How does that phrase fall upon your ears?
I think in some ways that is a trick of language. I mean, having worked most of my career in the State Department, I did a huge amount of my work in Chinese or French.
In both Mandarin and Cantonese?
Yes, in both. And the, in some ways that's a trick of language. The fact is, the Constitution is very clear. Article 6 says no religious test will be ever used for a position of public trust in the United States. Amendment 1 says Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or constraining the free exercise thereof. And so those two points of intentional approach to religion in society are kind of the framework that we have. It's interesting, though, you look at somebody like Lincoln, and in his second inaugural, he's probably the second least religious of all of the presidents, Jefferson being the first least religious. But Lincoln says, both sides in this war appealed to God. They both appealed to the Bible and read different scriptures. They prayed, and says, and there's a little bit of irony. He says, and none of them got their prayers answered completely, did they?
The Reverend Tony Hutchinson, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about separation of church and state, which will be the topic of his lecture tomorrow, an Ollie Community Lecture, 1 to 3 at the Camelot Theater in Talent. Father Tony, we don't seem to do a very good job of understanding the arguments of the other side in this debate. And at the base of it, are there misunderstandings about actually what the other's arguments are at heart?
When you say the other side, you mean...
When you're talking about people who are like, well, yeah, we can have a little religion in public life, versus people like, no, out of the...
The basic problem goes to the nature of political life and the nature of religious life. Politics is about building coalitions to get your way done in policy and in society. And that means identifying with groups. And identifying with groups means, in some ways, excluding others and labeling others as not part of the group and not helpful. Identifying enemies, to use Mr. Trump's tweetable word. Religion sometimes can be that way. Religion at its worst can be that way. It's about identity and party.
Us and them.
Us and them. But the fact is, all religions at their best, and when they really, really focus on the heart of religious experience, end up saying, it's not so easy as that. It's not a question us and them. And the difference between good and evil is not a dividing line between classes, as Marxists would say. It's not a dividing line between parties, as some partisans in the political discourse would say. It's not a division between nations or races or nationalities. It's not a division between groups of people. As Martin Luther King said, even the worst of our enemies have some good in them, and even the best of our neighbors have some bad in them. All of us are divided. As Solzhenitsyn puts it very clearly in his book, The Gulag Archipelago, he says the line between good and evil is not between groups of people. It's a very fine but very distinct line, and it runs down the middle of each and every human heart. And I think that the key to reaching across party lines and building common life, the key to having truly productive and helpful interreligious dialogue, is by forsaking party and by truly listening to other people. And that's hard, especially when groups of people have done you harm. Forgiveness is a big part of that. And that doesn't mean pinning a rose on something awful, mm-hmm. and calling something that's truly evil good, or forgetting it. It's a question of simply saying, I'm going to let that stay. I'm going to lay it aside. I'm not going to let it get in the way of relationship.
As a teacher once told me, believe in the phrase por las buenas. Everybody believes they're doing things for the good.
Yeah.
So, lighter subject here, maybe. Christmas is not long behind us, and I wonder what you make of the annual arguments over the proper places to display manger scenes and other holiday decorations. And we even had several school districts in the Portland area this year banning Santa Claus in the classroom.
Well, it's interesting. The fact is, if you use public funds to do something that has the effect of advancing a particular religion, or even religion over irreligion, that is excluded by the Constitution. And the founders did it deliberately. Their intention, they had seen the horrors of the religious wars in Europe, the 30 Years' War, the English Civil War. They had seen, the Protestant martyrs under Mary, the Roman Catholic martyrs under Henry VIII and Elizabeth. They had seen the horrors of abuse of mixing this, and they finally just said, no, in this country that we're founding, we'll keep them separate, and you won't be able to tax people to support a religion, and you won't be able to exclude people from public life because of their religion.
So it was an alien concept even in its time, wasn't it?
Yeah. But it was, again, a very intentional concept, and I think it's important to recognize it as such. And the fact is, maybe it's not an appropriate thing to have a display of the Ten Commandments in public space. Basically, when you do that, you have to say, well, whose Ten Commandments? Because, all of the different religions count them differently.
Right.
And they're different commandments, the actual list of them. Maybe it's appropriate not to have celebration of specific religions. Now, that said, the other end of it is that the state doesn't prohibit the free exercise. And so people celebrating Hanukkah or Diwali, people celebrating Christmas, they should be free to do that should do it openly. They just can't do it with public funds or resources.
Do you think you see the line clearer, and we're almost out of time here, do you think you see the line more clearly because you have worked literally in both state and church?
I think so. I think so. I had to really struggle with this issue on a day-to-day basis from the time of my ordination to the time I retired from the State Department. I actually have to say it's a good thing. What we've done in the United States to separate these things is a very good thing, because it focuses on our common life regardless of our religious commitments.
The Reverend Tony Hutchinson from Trinity Episcopal Church in Ashland, speaking at the Camelot Theater and Talent tomorrow, 1 to 3, in an Ali lecture about the separation of church and state. Father Tony, thanks so much for joining us on The Exchange.
Thank you.